Hi, my name is John.
And my name's Chris.
And this is Stay on Target.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Stay on Target. We're your hosts.
You can follow us on Twitter at JohnWright777.
And ChrisWright250. This is episode 56. We were reviewing the movie Fruitcake. We have a special guest today.
Yeah.
It is David Wilkinson.
David Wilkinson. Everyone, welcome David to the show.
Thank you so much. It is a pleasure to be here.
David is an independent filmmaker from Nashville, Tennessee, and he is the director and writer of Fruitcake.
All true.
Independent film.
And editor.
Yes, and editor.
All true.
And many other things.
I wore a lot of hats.
Yes, yeah. Lots. At the same time? Did you just stack them on top of your head?
Literally.
Was there a Viking helmet in there somewhere? Because I feel like that would be appropriate.
You could hang the other hats on the horns.
The Viking helmet would go well with your beard. You guys can hide behind your anonymity all you want, but your beard deserves some visual time.
It's probably about to be like cut off very soon.
Don't cut that. So. You could walk on a Peter Jackson set and you're camera ready, bro.
Like all of a sudden, I'm just
hand you a battle axe and fight some orcs.
You're a dwarf.
I'm slaying Smaug, you know?
Smaug.
Don't say that.
Or Smarg.
They've changed it. They've gone and changed it.
It was always Smaug until Peter Jackson got a hold of it.
I figured, how can you tell the difference between, you know, Smaug destroying a city and Smaug suffocating everyone in L.A., you know?
The desolation of Smaug.
Yes. Well, cool. Yes. Where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at DWCuts.
Awesome.
But, of course, you want to follow us at Fruitcake Movie.
Awesome. Cool. Awesome. So we have this segment sometimes that we call Operation Countdown. And
basically you have a limited amount of time to talk about a very large topic.
Like sure.
You usually will have to like cram in to get anything said, you know, to get all your thoughts in. You're going to have to, we're going to have to think on our toes.
Gotcha, I guess we're doing 10 minutes because I subconsciously selected the 10 minute clip.
Okay.
So we're doing 10 minutes. We have 10 minutes for this topic. You're going to have to say it because I don't remember it.
Okay.
T-minus 10 minutes and counting.
This week on Operation Countdown, we are talking about what series should be rebooted. So, franchises that should be rebooted, and then also, as a flip side, what series should never be rebooted.
So, like,
film or TV?
Film, TV, anything.
Like
anything is open?
Anything's open.
It's all on the table.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, in the form of movies. Like, reboot, like, in a movie. You know, kind of like they rebooted A-Team. I think we've talked about that before.
Yes.
And
just recently, we had the whole idea of, I guess, resetting the X-Men franchise, where essentially we rebooted the X-Men franchise without rebooting the X-Men franchise.
Yes.
It didn't negate anything that came before, but it kind of usurped it.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we could reboot Spider-Man. Can we do that?
Again?
Yeah,
for
why not?
Third time?
We're on a roll, man.
All right. Okay. Let's reboot Spider-Man. What do we do?
I mean, what do you want to do? We could do
so the Hulk. Like, I mean, let's talk about that for a minute. Yeah. Last one we had that was actually a Hulk movie
was a number of years ago.
Hulk.
And it was what's his name?
Edward Norton. It was better than the other one, Ang Lee.
It was better.
That version?
Yeah, it was better.
And it was relatively close together, too. Like, that was, you know, arguably...
Like, when they shot them? Like, when they came out?
Yeah, when they actually came out.
Not very many years. Yeah.
Yeah, like three.
So how would you reboot that, like, with Ruffalo? I mean...
I would do an entire film where you don't see Banner.
At all?
It's just Hulk.
It's just Hulk smashing things.
In space.
In space.
Yes.
Okay.
In space.
I like it. Yes.
Don't you think? That's not
with the Guardians of the Galaxy. No, it's not crazy.
Why not?
With the Guardians of the Galaxy.
They have opened that portal, man.
That's very true. That's very true. Okay, so other series is like, would you like TV series?
I'm sorry. Hulks.
Hulks?
Plural.
Like multiple?
No more Hulk.
We're talking about like families.
The next film is
like,
Hulks.
We're talking about like the Purple Hulk and there's a Red Hulk.
There's the Red Hulk. Yeah.
Is there a Blue Hulk? I don't know.
I don't know. We
I think
can
I'm
make
a yellow Hulk. I think I'm making up things now.
They're an equal opportunity color of Hulks.
Exactly.
That's true.
This is
bring all the colors of the rainbow to the Hulk universe.
A kaleidoscope of Hulkdom, as
they can
it
all sing that Michael Jackson song, We Are the World.
We Are the World. Yes. I like it. That's right. And they can also do like a plaid Hulk, like for all of those.
A Paisley Hulk?
Yeah, you know?
Sky's the limit. The galaxy is literally the limit. What about Annie? Could they reboot? Oh, they're doing that.
They are doing that, yeah.
Okay. Oh, well, they just reboot. Well, did they reboot Godzilla? I haven't seen it yet. It's a confession.
No, that's a reboot.
That is a reboot.
That was a much needed reboot.
Did you see it?
No, and I'm already expecting it to be way better than the last
one. Yeah, yeah. Oh, than the 2000...
The trailer is better than the last film.
So do you remember, there were so many like Taco Bell tie-ins with the last... That's the only thing I remember from the last Godzilla movie.
So Godzilla. what's the... I mean, what fast food franchise is going to capitalize off of this one? Godzilla gets hungry. He can't just be eating buildings and people all the time. Like he's got to give himself some tacos late night.
Crystal.
Fourth meal.
Crystals for a quarter.
Crystals, yes. Yeah. Yes, you take something large and it eats something very small.
And just a lots of it.
Lots
How does
of
he
it,
hold
yes.
it in his tiny little fingers? I mean, like the tiny little burger in his gigantic
fingers. It's the problem with all T-Rexes, you know, like they have to kind of maneuver.
Posable thumbs issue.
Well, and they have to bend over so far. To pick things up. Yeah, that's what they're so
why
angry.
Why are you so cranky? Look at my hands. What's wrong with you?
I can't even do a push-up.
I can't.
You
know?
So you were talking about, I think they're rebooting Knight Rider.
Okay. Looks,
with and I'm kind of disappointed that, I think I've talked to you about this.
We talked about that. Magnum P.I., I would actually like it. There's been a lot of talks about
so
it.
So who would play,
Aaron Eckhart?
Is that your answer to everything?
That's going to be my go-to. That's my clutch answer. I'm feeling Eric Eckhart.
I think his I Frankenstein's flopped.
Yeah. What about you? You mentioned, I think before we went on air, you mentioned like you thought potentially Star Wars might have been up for like reboot before they did the whole Disney deal thing.
Yeah. I mean, my theory was just simply that George's kiddos would take over, you know, in 10 years, whatever, whatnot.
Yeah.
And he would eventually just give them control and they would hire some, you know, Matthew Vaughn kind of person. And they would just reboot 4, 5, and 6.
Right on, right on.
With Aaron Eckhart as Han Solo.
I mean, that would be a good casting as far as Han Solo goes.
Yeah.
Okay, so as far as other franchises, Chris, do you have any franchises that you want to reboot?
Oh, man. That I want to reboot.
Or like ones that you should never reboot. Like, are there any that are just sitting there where it's like, no, never reboot this?
I don't think we should ever reboot Back to the Future. That needs to stay the same.
Okay.
Like you look at the past, like you could revisit, like you could go back and do it where they don't go back to like, you know, where they went to. They could go back to.
How do you do it without Christopher Lloyd as Doc Brown? How do you do it without?
Well, it'd have to be a different take.
You think he's irreplaceable? Christopher Lloyd.
It'd have to be someone who acts exactly like him and.
Yeah.
If they do the same character. Like, they'd have to, like, create a whole other character, I think.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it turns into something like the A-Team, like we talked about, where, like, they're just playing, like, it's basically like you're watching ghosts of these other characters.
Right.
That makes sense.
Like, so you can't just have, some residuals. Like, Chris Walken. That wouldn't work.
Yeah, that wouldn't work at all.
Dude. Plutonium. Like,
yeah. Yes. I love Christopher Walken.
There's a law ramp.
He could do it.
He put totally a crazy spin on it.
Dude. emphasis on crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
You know, no one's going to like Doc Brown, but yeah, it would be interesting.
Okay, other things that nobody should reboot.
Well, I don't think anyone should ever reboot Jaws or It's a Wonderful Life.
Okay.
I do think, just as a fan, I would love for them to reboot Buck Rogers.
Definitely.
Flash Gordon.
Ooh.
They tried. Sci-Fi did a real... it was a piece of poo. But I think that could be... amazing.
I think it would be appropriate too. I think it would have something cool to say, these days. There's comic books right now that kind of do those, that do like Flash Gordon and stuff. And they've been really good too. So, I mean, maybe they could pull some from some of that material, you know, and do a series for sure.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm going to go ahead and take this opportunity too and say that I would love to see Twin Peaks be revisited as not a reboot, but as something that takes place 20 to 30 years later, which has been talked about.
Like a sequel?
Yeah.
It more or less would be an episodic sequel.
What do you think of the Fargo, like, continuation, basically, on FX right now?
I haven't seen it. I'm really interested in it.
Yeah.
I'm really interested in seeing Martin Freeman play the same role that William H. Isn't he kind of playing that character?
The character's kind of the same, but, like, none of the characters are the same. Like, these are not the same people. It's basically just the same world, which I think is interesting.
Okay.
It's a cool way to...
I heard it's a slow burn, that it didn't start off real super strong.
Yeah.
Like, the pilot, okay.
Yeah.
So, there is a... Like, Terminator was something that where it's like, we tried to do that a little bit, like, but it was like more like...
I think we are
like
rebooting this.
I think it would be a good time to reboot it.
Yeah. It's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah? Really?
It's happening.
Yeah.
Man,
they got Arnold on board, man. They've got... They're moving forward with that.
I mean, he's still in that kind of... he's in great condition to do that type of movie, too, since he's coming back for Expendables and, you know, that's what he's come back for a couple other movies, too.
This is my thing, though. Should they be using Arnold? Because, like, you know, now we're married to Arnold for for this reboot.
Ah, so it's like so basically he's only going to get older. And so if we do,
should we have chosen someone like Dwayne The Rock Johnson?
That would have been a good choice.
As a Terminator.
That would have been a good choice and very intimidating.
Scare the crap out of me.
Oh, yeah.
Or who's the dude that's in Guardians of the Galaxy? He's a wrestler. Batista.
Is it Batista? Is he in Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yeah.
Vin Diesel is the voice of Groot.
Not Vin Diesel.
Some of the other guy.
Not the big real guy. Thick dude. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's Batista.
Batista.
He'd be...
Yeah,
good,
yeah. But I'm just thinking someone younger that can like carry the franchise forward rather than let it die with them.
Or, I mean, it's just, it's a matter of like, if you're going to reboot something, actually reboot it. Don't just like go try to revisit the same material with, a different lead. I guess it would be just a different lead character. Sarah Connor would be just a different person.
I also love Northern Exposure. Did you guys ever watch that? On.
No.
That show never advanced. There's nothing. There's no. The characters never evolved. If you watch the last episode, they're still spouting the same nonsense, and you love it. Like every time they speak, you're just like, it's like a warm blanket. Like don't ever change. I would love for them to just pick right up where they left off.
Right,
man. I'm kind of changing categories, I think, but I would like to see like certain films made into series.
Into TV shows.
I would like to see The Incredibles made into something.
Oh my gosh, dude. We're getting Incredibles 2.
Yes.
I'm excited about that. Yes. That's probably my favorite.
The more I think about The Incredibles, it's like that is the perfect superhero movie.
Yes. It really is.
Yes.
It's the perfect James Bond movie, too.
Yes, it is.
And
yes.
It's the perfect Pixar movie.
Yes.
Yep. I mean, it's just everything about that one just screams like, hey, this is the best superhero movie that you could possibly do. Because it winks at things, and it also, but it still advances on that same, that same topic that we've seen over and over again.
One thing I would like to see, not a reboot, but a reunion, is of Seinfeld.
Ooh.
I would love to see a Seinfeld reunion.
Well, they did that kind of in a weird
enthusiasm.
Way.
Right. That was that wasn't really, though, like a proper, reunion.
So, like, not a reboot, though, but that's like a reunion.
Yeah.
Like a miniseries? Just like during the holidays.
Oh, dude, I would totally do that.
Yeah,
Seinfeld
yeah.
for the holidays.
One.
Seinfeld for the holidays? Yeah. That'd be amazing. All right, now to our main segment. We are talking about
Fruitcake.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's a film, and so I guess just for people who may not have encountered the film before, go ahead and give us like a synopsis of like what are we looking at as far as the film goes.
Okay, so Fruitcake is basically a commentary on man's struggle with isolation. That's top to bottom what it's supposed to be about and how man deals with that. I wrote the main character Adam to be a very reclusive kind of guy, so that everyone from their most extroverted self to their most introverted self can on some level relate to him, because there are a lot of people who are very outgoing that are still very shallow and afraid to be vulnerable and real with people. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have people doing the same thing. So their personalities may not match up, but everyone struggles with their need for community.
Mm-hmm.
So I figured if I write him in an extreme way, it'd be more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone can relate on some level. And so he is a guy I don't want to, at least until we get to later sections.
Yes, this is a non-spoiler
section. This is a non-spoiler section, so I won't explain the title too much, but I will say that fruitcake as a dessert is really the butt of the dessert world. If desserts were throwing out punchlines, then fruitcake would be the butt of the joke.
Nice.
But fruitcake, if it's saturated properly, gets better with age.
Nice.
So I'll just say that.
Nice.
But yeah, this guy, Adam, you're really kind of observing him in his environment, and he's a guy who doesn't match up on paper with pretty much anything around him. So in a motorized world, he rides his bike.
Yeah.
In the day of the iPhone, he's still, he's still rocking the Walkman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So, we put him in a lot of different situations, the people around him in his neighborhood, quite a bit different from him. So
talk a little bit about like, where this came from, why you wrote it, and, like the funding of this, who was involved and
sure.
all that.
I wrote an outline for this about 5 years ago, It was called The Doyle Project, and it was a middle-aged man, reclusive man. Without spoilers, I can't go too far beyond that. But I wrote an outline, and then I never really moved on with it. And then 2 years ago, I was having coffee with my producing partner, Bobby Marco, who is an excellent cinematographer. He does a lot of documentaries, and he was looking to do something that was narrative. And I pitched him several things, and he lit up when I shared the story, which at the time still didn't have the title that it does now. And so because he was excited about it, that's the one that we moved forward on. Mm. Did that answer your question? Let's see. Funding.
Yeah, you funded this on Indiegogo, right?
We went with Indiegogo because we figured we'll get what we get. Mm-hmm. If we, with Kickstarter, you miss your mark, you get nothing.
Right.
So we went with Indiegogo. Mm-hmm. We did not get even close to what we wanted. Mm-hmm. So I immediately went to this emotional tailspin and started doing rewrites and built a plan B script, which turned out to be a much better story than the first round.
Nice.
I mean, excellent. My rough draft is by far a worse product than
so was it
what
just a link thing? Like, was it? Did you just there cut was some things out, or was it?
I feel like there
you
was
honed
some
in on what the actual story was.
Yes, I feel like I started. I'll say that I started and ended in my first draft much more full length.
Okay,
this is a short film. Mm-hmm. This is a film that right now stands at 33 minutes, which is even long for a short film, which I was okay with. Mm-hmm. That's what I wanted to tell a story at this length, and try to challenge myself to actually have character development, not just a concept piece. Mm-hmm. Most short films, you really there's not much time to develop much character. So it was kind of a personal challenge for me. I had an opening scene with him at his office, and I had this really huge logistical nightmare for the final scene, and I couldn't pull it off.
Were there lasers in the first draft? Like
there was pyrotechnics.
Oh nice.
No, there was just getting the locations was a real bear, and the funding would have had to get everything. Mm-hmm. So when I rewrote it, I trimmed it down quite a bit, made it much shorter, and it did just really hone in on him. It kept it about him and his surroundings and what he needed to do for himself. Yeah. And so as a result, I think we got, I feel like a little over a third of what we were hoping to get, and that's what we made the film on.
Is that when you made the switch from an older middle-aged man to?
That happened immediately. That wasn't a late thing.
Okay.
That was when I started fleshing out the rough draft. I actually think, if I remember right, that was something that me and Bobby had talked about, and we were talking about like who would we cast, like just based on people that we might even know that were actors, and maybe I don't quite remember. Maybe Bobby said, "Why don't we go with a younger guy?" I'm glad we did.
Yeah,
I'm glad we went with a guy who's in his mid-30s.
I think that would be it ends up a little bit more relatable.
I feel like this guy really he offers people that moment in your life where you there's plenty of time. Mm-hmm. Ahead of you, there's a lot of life to live, but there's also a lot of water under the bridge. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff that could, stumble him, cause him to falter. So,
yeah. For people who want to go check this out before we get to the spoiler part, where can they find this?
Fruitcakemovie.com. Awesome. And I'd like to change what I said earlier for the Twitter handle. It's @fruitcake_movie.
All right.
Nice.
@fruitcake_movie.
@fruitcake_movie.
That's correct. And so, we're on Instagram, we're on Pinterest, Facebook, all that stuff. But yes, fruitcakemovie.com. You can go and download the film there for a very affordable price. Or you could get the deluxe pack. Which
has a lot of value. Like that definitely did.
I feel like it does
for sure. Yeah. There's a commentary.
Yep.
The soundtrack.
Which you can get that as a standalone. The soundtrack is amazing.
It is.
It is amazing. Our composer James Childs put something together so beautiful. I could really talk to you about that forever.
And yeah.
I won't. I'll just say that you should listen to the soundtrack.
Man, there's a couple of great moments in it as far as the soundtrack goes, and not just from the standpoint of like, hey, these are great songs, which they are. There's some moments where there was some choices to not use some soundtrack or something. It seemed, you know, where the lack of soundtrack or the absence of it impacts you a little bit more, just based on, you know, the, you know, just not being there. So
there was a few scenes where we actually ended up removing a track that James cued for the scene and ended up taking it out. Wasn't my original idea. Again, this is where it's good to collaborate with other people who can look at something fresh. And I think, again, this was something with Bobby where he watched it and he thought, oh yeah, it does sound nice, but what if we just let this one breathe on its own? And that's the scene that I'm talking about specifically involves him and a female, Connie, and it's a pretty heavy scene. And the cue for that was beautiful, and now it's just kind of like, you know, one of the B-sides. It's an extra. It's a bonus track.
That's in the deluxe package.
That's in the deluxe package. All available for a very affordable price.
Yes. Fruitcakemovie.com.
Fruitcakemovie.com.
So I think the spoiler clock might be winding
it's
down
winding
right
down.
Now.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Yep. There's a lot of like spoiler is about to go.
Can
go
I say
everywhere.
One now?
No, no. After the countdown, it's going 3, 2, 1. Throw out a spoiler.
The lead female in his life, Connie, is actually a prostitute. He pays her to come and have dinner at his house and listen to his jokes and look at his magic tricks, and he pays her for this. That's how lonely he is.
One question with that I think has been, do his neighbors know that that's what's going on, or do they think that he's doing prostitute things with her?
and let me say, she's probably not even a prostitute as much as she's just... She works probably for like an escort service.
Okay.
I don't know why I feel the need.
Well, he calls her a prostitute.
But inner mind is also a 13-year-old or a 12-year-old. So, but yeah. And that's not to say that he's slow, but his perspective on the world is a little skewed.
Right.
But yeah, his neighbors don't know about her. Minus Caroline, his next door neighbor, who's very important to the story.
Right.
She not only has been watching, she's very nosy. She's not watching him because she loves him or cares. She's watching because one, she knew his mom and they were friendly. And two, she's just nosy. And so she's very aware.
Well, you know, who doesn't like watching drama unfold around you? And you know, his life, especially in like where we pick it up, has a overabundance of drama. In the time period that we have. So it takes, I mean, I guess from opening to ending, it's what is it, like a week and a half, something like that? I mean, roughly duration-wise?
I'd say that's fair. It's probably about because Connie visits twice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So we at least have a week. So I'd say 2 weeks.
Yes.
This is a great question. I'm curious.
Yeah.
Were you guys surprised by that reveal with Connie, with the exchange of the money?
I think that... I mean, immediately whenever, you know, she was obviously waiting on something. I was waiting for something to be explained about that.
Yeah.
Because during the dinner, it's obvious, you know, it's forced, and there's some moments where he's telling jokes, and it's obvious that like
it's awkward.
Yeah.
And you don't know why until that point.
Right.
And she's looking at the clock. I think at the clock moment, you're like. At the very least, you know that she has an appointment, or either she's.
She doesn't want to be there.
I even thought maybe she was a nurse of some sort and was like coming to check on him and to sit with him for however long.
Sure,
you know. So I mean, I thought maybe that was the case, and even whenever, but when it became painfully obvious, whenever you know she asks for the money and he pays her, that was the case.
Right.
So,
does he work?
Yeah, he does. Now, it's kind of irrelevant to the present story as to what it is, but we know he collects a steady paycheck. I would say that he worked in an office in the early draft.
Okay.
And he was only really there because his uncle was the lead sales manager, and his uncle passed away, committed suicide, and now his new boss is like, you're going to have to carry your own weight now, pal. All that got... ditched when we moved on to plan B. So what he does now is kind of up to whoever. The bike was originally to show him that's just how you would transport from work to home. But then on our plan B, once this where the story is now, the bike is really more symbolic of just his wandering. He has no idea that he's lost because he doesn't have a destination in mind, so he's unaware that he's lost, so he's just wandering.
Like, whenever I watch it, it almost feels like he doesn't even really have a home either, because he's living in this shell of a house.
Yeah, I think there was one wall that was
with his memories.
It was partially painted wall back there. That was a nice touch as well. You know, there was the moment where I was like, man, yeah, he's living in this house, and he's, I guess, trying to have a friendship and have companionship with his mother through her journal, where he's trying to remember conversations with her.
Reconnect and stay. Yeah.
Right. And finish something that she started in some, you know, strange way, connecting with her.
The fact that he's still in her house shows how stuck he is. It's the house he grew up in.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't change anything about it. There, you know, the furniture's the same.
He hasn't changed a thing. It's mm-hmm. only anything that has changed is strictly functional.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he might now stock his own kind of cereal.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But he's using her bowls.
Right.
You know.
And he's using her recipes as well. He's kind of living in that shell.
So. Or he knows three recipes, wasn't it? Three?
It was grilled cheese,
lasagna. Mm-hmm.
Third one?
Was it burritos?
Yes, it was burritos.
Yeah.
That was it.
On that same line, a part that I really liked was whenever he was trying to remember he remembered the first part of something she told him,
mm-hmm.
right?
And then, but he couldn't remember the second part,
right?
Until like that turning point mm-hmm. in the movie, and it's very emotional. Like there, he's sitting on the bed,
right,
with himself, which is amazing.
Cool.
And the music, you know, just like really brings that all to, you know, a point there, and it's really cool the way that he connects his past with his present.
So there's three things I would really like to say in response to that. I hope I can remember all three of them. Number one, what he says or what she helps him remember, mm-hmm. that statement. That's why I wrote the film. That mm-hmm. statement, now that we're on the spoiler section, the question is, are you getting further away or closer to the life that you're intended to have or that you want to have?
Mm-hmm.
That was something that was a very personal question posed to me
mm-hmm.
At one point, and I didn't have an answer to it, so I wrote a story about it.
Mm-hmm.
I can say with all joy and happiness that I definitely feel like I'm living the kind of life now
mm-hmm.
that I want to live. I make intentional choices to give myself a gift of coffee every day or take a cat nap, you know, mm-hmm. or whatever, you know, little moments of victory kind of thing. So that was a very personal thing to me as to the genesis of this story.
Mm-hmm.
Something else about it is that the reason why he forgot what she said is because he kind of blocked it out because the first thing hurt so much.
Right.
It was that hard truth that it's not going to get any easier for him. She's a single mom
mm-hmm.
and she's like, this is the world you're going to live in.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
it's not going to get any easier
mm-hmm.
for mm-hmm. you.
And he couldn't get past that point.
He couldn't get past that. And that's why his inner voice is still, I mean, it's kind of the Peter Pan syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't want to grow up, develop beyond a certain place because it's too difficult for him.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The third thing I wanted to say was when he's talking to himself,
mm-hmm.
that was a total accident, or it was a beautiful coincidence, providence. There's a lot of words that I could throw in there, but more or less my son, mm-hmm. Zachary,
right.
who plays young Adam in the flashback scene.
Mm-hmm. And is also the voice.
He's also the narration voice. That scene was an add-on. I wrote that scene specifically for the actress, because she tried out for the role of Connie, the prostitute, and I felt like there was like this maternal thing.
Mm-hmm.
And originally he found the question from her on a card.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, he already finds a recipe. Mm-hmm. Let's not have him keep finding paper from his mom with all these epiphanies.
She just wrote notes everywhere.
Just a bunch of clues around the house.
And I thought, now wait, I could do a flashback scene. That's and awesome. She could play the mom. And mm-hmm. my little Zachary has this amazing mm-hmm. moment that I knew he could capture.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put him together at a casting session, and I loved it. So I blocked Zachary. I had him all set mm-hmm. for his scene on mm-hmm. one of the angles. Justin Hand, our lead actor, mm-hmm. who does an amazing job as Adam, he was usually nowhere to be seen.
Mm-hmm.
He's usually off drinking hot tea in a corner of a bedroom that you can't find. He was Adam in so many ways. And he happened to just walk in the room when we were setting up, getting the lighting set and all that. And he doesn't ask. He just walks over and sits next to Zachary on the bed
mm-hmm.
and goes right into character and starts talking with him
mm-hmm.
and my Zach turns to him and just goes with it
mm-hmm.
and they have this like magic thing mm-hmm. and I was watching it and in my head I was thinking, oh my gosh, what are you doing to my film? I don't know what to do with this. Mm-hmm. This is great, but I don't know how to use this. Mm-hmm. You know, my second thought was to be able to talk the older version of you to be able to talk to the younger version of you. What would that younger version of you say to you? Mm-hmm. And I just thought, oh, that's so great. We got to have that in there. And so it was about that time that I looked at, Bobby and I was like, are we rolling? He was like, we're rolling. No, don't worry. We're getting all this. And so it made its way into the film, and I'm glad it did.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite parts of the movie.
It's everyone's favorite scene. The flashback scene, which I love. Yeah. I love that an accidental thing on set and a scene that wasn't originally intended for the story is what everyone has latched onto the most.
Something that, like, at least that I like about it is, just like you said, you know, being able to talk to your younger self. But I think a lot of people like lose who they were as a child, or lose like that part of them that allows them to enjoy things the same way. Like, I think about this a lot. Like, whenever you're a kid, like, you have, you know, even just like if you have just like something in your hand, like, you will look at it and you'll study it and you will learn everything about whatever like is in your hand.
Right.
And you don't look at the world the same way as you grow up. Right. And you don't look out the window as you're driving down the car, you know, like you're paying attention to driving. Like, you don't learn about things the same way. And I miss that. Like, I miss just being able to sit and just like think and like look at leaves on a tree and like that kind of stuff. And like, I think people like honestly miss, they think that they can't entertain those kind of thoughts and that part of themselves.
Yeah.
And you know, like, even people who, you know, really like the same kind of things, like the, like, you know, movies and, like, you know, if you like Star Wars when you're a kid, you still like Star Wars when you grow up, but, you know, you like it, but yet you still, you know, are going to go home and spend all your time, you know, on, you know, like, work.
Right.
And you don't, you know, enjoy the world the same way.
What's weird is we do exercise it in certain ways so that we don't find it absurd.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If we try to approach it, you know, really cognizant, it seems absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why, you know, it just, I think it's that vulnerability thing. Mm-hmm. I think by nature, we just do. And we don't actually just sit and exist. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I know this sounds very artsy-fartsy, but I believe that.
You know, there was something interesting, like the bedroom shot there, kind of branching off of that. There's a moment early at the very, very beginning, I think before, I guess we were narrating at that point, where he pauses before Connie arrives, before 8 o'clock.
Right.
He pauses in front of that room and kind of like almost goes in. Almost has the I guess the revelation.
Right.
And almost relives that conversation.
Right.
But then he doesn't, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I guess later on, as he goes in and finally, you know, decides to go in and relive that conversation, It just becomes a theme of, you know, that's where he feels like he needs to go. He's just drawn there. And even at the party, whenever he's, you know, kind of sensory overload,
yes,
he goes into the bedroom, which is in roughly the same place in the hallway, uh-huh, which is in kind of roughly the same setup. I mean, was that a conscious decision, or is this kind of just a theme that just kind of happened over the course of production, of the bedroom and him just kind of being drawn to that and trying to experience that conversation again?
The bedroom at the party was, again, another add-on,
yeah,
that I thought, oh, how nice would it be to have this moment where he's so, you know, he's taken a step. He's at least circumstantially trying to step out there.
Right. He got pulled into this party, you know, just by some guy
who's everyone's best friend. And he finds himself upstairs.
Until you get into a fight with somebody, then it's like, right, I'm out of here. Yeah. You know,
he's Wally. Or, yeah. No, he's Eddie Haskell.
He is Eddie Haskell.
Leave It to Beaver.
For sure.
Wow. I can't talk anymore about my film. That's crazy. He is so Eddie Haskell. But he's, you know, we send them almost through this labyrinth of like sensory overload. So the bedroom upstairs was actually specifically just supposed to kind of feel like he's going back to the womb. I mean, it's just this place of secure. I mean, I think he was even happier with the lights out, mm-hmm, honestly.
Yeah.
He doesn't have to look at the loneliness of the room, that he's the only one in there, that it's a room he doesn't recognize.
Mm.
But the whole reason with the tease, with his mother's room in the house,
yeah,
where he doesn't go in,
mm-hmm,
is because he hasn't been back in her room since, yeah, she passed away. And it's not until he goes in there and actually just he literally sits in that experience before he can, you know, again, have that frontal lobe moment where I remember what it was mm-hmm. that she told me.
Yeah.
Has he even really dealt with the fact that, you know, she's not there anymore?
I don't think he has. Mm-hmm. I think that when he, and since we're mm-hmm. past the spoiler section,
yes.
right, so when he hugs or mm-hmm. is hugged by his neighbor Caroline
yeah.
in the final moments of the film, mm-hmm. we shot that and I remember thinking they're taking too long. This is really long and drawn out. I'm going to cut around this. As an editor, I was thinking it's just too long. Mm-hmm. And man,
by the way, that was my favorite scene.
Thank you.
Yeah. The front porch there. That was my favorite scene. Cause it was the one last hurdle that he had to, you know, he decided, hey, I'm not just going to get pulled into this
right.
and pulled into companionship. I'm going to choose to go to do this.
Right.
And then even after that point, after he came up with a step of, hey, I'm going to make friends and this is going to be thing. I've closed the journal.
Right.
He then still is presented with, she was never your girlfriend.
Right.
And you have not had any friends for the last 3 years. And not only is your, you know, have you dealt with the fact that your mother is passed away, you are alone.
Yeah. He's never properly grieved her passing. So in that hug, he really has to sink into her mm-hmm. on so many levels. I don't have anybody. Mm-hmm. My relationship is not what I think it is. It's mm-hmm. fraudulent at best. I've never dealt with the passing of my mom. I only have the cold sting of loneliness to look forward to unless I literally step forward. Mm-hmm. So, that moment felt exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
The duration of the hug, it was just this nice moment. It was, I always approach, my favorite stories in film with, the three, I talk with my friends about this all the time. It has to have three magic moments.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes back to Howard Hawks, one of the golden age Hollywood producers. He always talked about that a good film has three great scenes.
Mm-hmm.
If you can hang your hat on three great scenes, you got a film. Mm-hmm. And so that scene had to work.
Mm-hmm.
If that scene doesn't work, the film doesn't work.
Right.
And that was also a plan B. Originally, she comes to his porch with her son after he has already delivered fruitcakes to her son. And she's like, did you bring a fruitcake to my kid? And then she invites him to church. And then you've got this big church scene at the end. And
yeah.
So anyway,
I like the way it is now.
I do too.
It's almost because he's dealt with, you know, the loss of his mother now, and he's dealt with the fact, hey, I need people.
Right.
But he still hasn't dealt with the fact that the last 3 years were me being alone and me wasting you know, time and whatever, you know, so he's presented with those things. It's almost like, in Die Hard where in the final moments, someone else rears their ugly head and you have to take out the last guy, you know? So it's like, it's the last hurdle.
Comes back for a second kill.
It comes back Hans, and it's worse the last time, you know?
Or it was his the long haired guy.
Yeah. Oh, the long blonde hair guy.
He was the blonde hair guy.
Think he's dead and then he comes back.
But yeah, so it almost is that moment of way more emotional.
Way more emotional.
Yeah, it's way more. Yeah.
But it is that moment where you think where he thought that he had dealt with it. He thought he was, you know, he thought he was on the downhill. He thought he was there, but then all of a sudden, you know, in life, and that's how life is. And
yes.
It's just you think you're there, and then bam, it gets you that one last time, and you have to overcome.
Well,
so
it was real important for me to give him a chance to step out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to use kind of a Rahab kind of character. So Connie as a prostitute,
mm-hmm.
I really wanted to have a character like Tarantino always talks about. He likes to present his characters warts and all.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to have someone who was a catalyst that was completely broken.
Mm-hmm.
My son made the observation that Connie tells him all the things that she can't take into her own life.
Right.
Which I hadn't really thought about, but I think that's very true. So he steps out with the party scene, but it's not planned. He just kind of shows up into this moment and is like, sure, I'll, you know, go inside and do this thing.
It's almost like a Pilgrim's Progress. You know, he just gets off the path all of a sudden, you know, is just,
and it's a complete failure.
Yeah.
Like he really gets his butt kicked. I mean, it's a painful experience.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think it would be an injustice to try to ask people to look inside, and see if there's something they need to be doing bigger or different or a little more adventurous or a little braver in their life, and say, you know, just give it a shot and it'll work out, because it won't. It'll be painful. Mm-hmm. It may be for a long time. In a 33-minute film, I only had time to show it once, mm-hmm. you know, and then it gets a little better. But that was pretty important to show that it's not going to work out right away.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
I like, you know, throughout, you know, in that instance and whenever he goes over to, you know, ask for a cup of sugar.
The eggs.
That's what it is. Yes.
Yes.
Eggs. Can I have eggs? Do you have eggs? Can I have eggs? I need eggs. How about you got some eggs?
I'll give you some eggs.
Yeah. What is it you want? Oh, eggs.
Whenever
I thought he wanted a cow. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whenever he takes both of those steps, I like the fact that he's making that effort himself.
Uh-huh. Yes.
You know, because, you know, if he's going to change, he has to be the one initiating it.
Right.
Mm. And I really like, you know, he's trying. Like,
yeah.
He knows that he has to do something.
And yeah. It's so absurd that he's trying to do this thing that his mom would do, but he has to go borrow something to give it in the first place. Mm-hmm.
That even in that moment, he, you know, he's not self-sufficient. You know, he needs everyone.
Yeah, that's very true.
And so another thing that I wanted to say about kind of the neighbors and that aspect is that while they aren't, while you mentioned earlier that she's kind of just nosy, you know, she's just looking for the drama
Caroline,
next door.
His neighbor,
yes, Caroline
right.
and even, you know, down to her sons.
Right.
They're just kind of, you know, using him as entertainment. You know,
right.
They're interested, but they're not really friends.
Just as a quick side note, that might be part of why the film is called Fruitcake.
Mm.
Because maybe that's one of the names the neighbors, the kids would call him.
Yeah.
LC, who plays Jarvis, her youngest son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who starts to shake his hand.
Yeah. He says, it's real quick. He says, why do people call you names? So
yeah.
Maybe Fruitcake. Is
maybe Fruitcake.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, he's a punchline to her sons.
Yes. Yeah. And even to, I mean...
Is that her older son?
The older son, yes.
It is her older son.
Yes.
He's probably college age.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She's playing, you know, someone in her late 40s.
Even at the end, whenever he's having this big emotional moment on the porch with her, he's still entertainment to that guy, you know?
I don't know
what his name is, but he pops his head out. Man, you look terrible, you know?
His name is Alvin, played by Dupree Young.
That's awesome.
And man... Thank you, Dupree, for that nice comedic break.
Yeah, yes, yeah. Like after moment. You just you're shedding tears.
It's
you know,
a nice
like,
little roller coaster of emotion at the end. Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to pull out of those kind of scenes, and humor is a good way to do it.
Yeah,
I think so,
for sure. And it wasn't heavy handed. The humor in that,
no.
especially
oh,
that, it wasn't heavy handed at all. It wasn't like oh, and then we're all happy and things. It was definitely one of those moments where this guy has been looking at this, you know, the next door neighbor as entertainment or as, you know, just, oh, the crazy next door neighbor
right.
for so long that rings true, I guess, you know, yeah. whenever he makes fun of him that last time, you're like, ah, this guy again, you know.
I appreciate what you said about the comedic element of it because that's incredibly intimidating to me to write
comedy.
I mean, I've heard other, you know, like profile Hollywood directors talk mm-hmm. about how they would much rather shoot a high octane action film, big mm-hmm. budget, than a comedy
mm-hmm.
because comedy is you can't force it. I mean,
right.
you really can't even plan for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so often you are really relying on the people who show up
right.
to deliver the lines to bring their own essence to that. Oh wow, I am artsy fartsy tonight. Their essence on camera.
Well, you know, you think about something like you know Pirates of the Caribbean that
right.
franchise.
Yeah.
The first one. Super
brilliant.
Funny,
yeah.
like amazing movie. It's hilarious.
Mm-hmm.
And the next two, the comedy is so forced
it is.
That it doesn't even like feel, I mean, it's terrible.
What it seemed like to me was that the first time they kind of inserted these funny scenarios in there, but then the actors then came mm-hmm. and brought their own personalities and made it funnier. Because, you know, and then the second two films, it seems like they were writing these lines. Oh, it'll be funny whenever Jack Sparrow says, you know, and
right.
that kind of, it's not with almost a wink.
There's no wink.
Yeah. There's no wink at it. It's literally just, this is just the most heavy handed.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. You know,
and it's, you know, it's common cause it's safe, right?
You right.
know, like let's go with what worked the first time.
Right.
And we'll just keep trying
right.
to milk it.
I think that, you know, that's why like Hangover 2 flops. That's why Ocean's 12 flops, you know, like those middle films of these comedies.
Yeah.
they're just not that good because they based everything off of the same kind of jokes as the first movie.
Yes.
It's kind just revisited, you know? Right. So were there any challenges during like production of this thing? Cause you know, you mentioned the budget earlier when we talked about, you know, Indiegogo. What were some of the challenges that an independent film being made outside of Hollywood, outside of a lot of the larger meccas for film, what do you run into whenever you do production on that scale?
The first shot, we ran into Mother Nature. We shot the fight scene in the alley first, and it poured rain the entire time we were shooting. From like 8 p.m. till I think it was 2 a.m.
That wasn't planned.
Not at all. And I'm so glad.
It works.
So glad it rained. I mean, it makes we tried to make the best of it. And I've got some great cinematographers who, one of our camera operators, Scott Moore, that dude is so much more than a camera operator. I mean, he's a filmmaker. He's a better filmmaker than I am. He donated some time as a camera op, and he sat in the truck, and we got that shot looking through the truck as it's approaching him in the alley. Mm. And you got the rain, you know, the texture just hitting. Mm-hmm. I loved all of those accidents. So it was scary because it was our first night. Yeah. And we had a lot of people there, and everyone's looking at me, wondering what shots are you going to cut so that we can go inside and get warm, you know? And we pushed through it and had a really good time actually, but it was difficult right out of the gate. Something else that was really difficult was the party scene, which I for years thought it would be so fun to shoot a party scene with a house band. And like, I know guys who could actually be the house band. I mean, we just need a house. That's all we need. You know, we'll get on Craigslist, which I did. And that was such a mistake, but we had people show up and, that was a little difficult because
you had extras show up. That's what you put on Craigslist.
Our first assistant director, Marisa, she was kind of in charge of getting all those people together. And I was giving her a hard time because she basically was inviting people to really come to a Friday night party. She's like, bring your own beer party. Oh, dude. Like,
and you guys were just there with a film crew.
I had to rein people in. It was like,
whose house was this?
It was, people were doing like Journey karaoke on my microphone. Like it got bad. We go upstairs to shoot something. I come downstairs and I've lost all control.
It's a good thing you didn't have like the East Nashville, like hula hoop dancers and you know, just, spray painters.
Yeah.
That could have happened.
To answer your question, that would have been really funny. I could not tell you where that house is right now.
Yeah.
It's in East Nashville, I believe.
Right on.
I'm going to say 6th Street.
So you've also just got kind of the random neighborhood people going, "Hey, so they're playing a show over here. Let's go visit." You know,
one of the coolest things, this happened all throughout the production. I would meet people who could just hook us up with things that I was like, are you serious?
That's awesome.
We had a guy who showed up and I think he was a grip. He worked for the city and he shut down that street for us that night.
We had
traffic issues, which as an independent film, you're going to have, you're going to have people talking across the street and you're like, shut up, we're doing a film. And they're like, you're in my neighborhood, pal.
Right.
Like, you're going to pay me?
Right.
You're going to shut me up? You're going to give me, where's the money?
Especially in East Nashville.
Yeah. And we called this guy because he told me, like, seriously, you need me to shut down the street? Let me know. We called him like 30 minutes later. The cones were up. They shut down the street for us.
That's amazing.
Dude. I thought I was on cloud nine. Like, I was like, I've arrived, man.
Was there an aerial shot or a jib shot in that in that fight scene?
In the fight scene, we did have a jib.
A jib, okay.
The jib operator, his name is Andrew Humphreys, is a friend of mine, and
Was that the same? Was that a jib shot at the beginning of the movie, or was that aerial?
That was aerial, right? That was the those little quadcopters.
Yeah.
Oh, dude. Did you get to fly it, by the way?
Did you have red on it?
I did not. We the company is called Vivid Aerials, and I think they were kind of just getting started at the time. I could be wrong, but they were gracious enough to more or less donate that time.
Wow.
I can't even begin to tell you how many financial corners we were able to cut in this film. I don't know how it happened.
Wow.
I really don't.
That's awesome.
I could not have done that on my own. There were just things that were happening for the betterment of this film that are still beyond me. But yeah, and that obviously made the production look that much nicer.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, it helps whenever one of your opening shots is a nice aerial shot.
Is that a helicopter?
Yeah,
no. It's a dude with a remote control, but it's still really cool. But no, yeah, it looks awesome. Like it's in a Terminator film. It's got all these legs and it's sci-fi.
It's awesome.
All you need is the awesome. Dun, 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 dun.
Dun, 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 dun.
Let's talk about the music for a second.
Okay.
Like, I love the song that's playing whenever he's listening to, you know, we mentioned it earlier, mm-hmm. whenever he's, I guess, clipping his bushes.
Well, he's got right. the Walkman on.
Yeah,
you
he's
know?
Got the Walkman on.
That is his music.
What is, I think you, I heard you mention you wanted that to be like a certain other, like another song, like you want it to sound like something.
Well, it's like, it's retro music too. It kind of feels like 80s or something like that.
Or
you
at
know?
Least close to where he's stuck.
Right.
Right.
You know,
I wanted it to sound like Depeche Mode.
Yes.
Because my first CD, back when, you know, people listened to CDs, was Depeche Mode Violator. And that blew my mind. So anyway, I loved that sound. I loved The Cure, like all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. James is a huge fan of Drive.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Which we talked about earlier.
Yeah.
He loves that soundtrack. I mean, he loves everything about that film. Mm-hmm. So I don't think I've asked James this, but this would be my opportunity. James, were you ripping off Drive? I think you were ripping off Drive. I wanted it to sound like Depeche Mode, and it did. But I think you wanted it to sound like Drive, and it did.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it did. And then the other time, like at the end of the movie, the song at the end,
the vocal song, yes. Strange Beautiful. Situation.
Strange Situation.
The artist, Tanya Godsey, is a personal friend of mine. The first time I heard her sing, I literally cried.
Wow.
And I thought, man, if I ever have the opportunity to do any kind of a story where I would need a song,
man,
I have to have Tanya's voice in it. So she was kind of working, and another friend of ours, Kevin Perry, was very helpful with working with her and James on that, and he contributed to the strings in it. For Tanya, you know, it was really important that she nailed it, and I wasn't very forthcoming with like what I was having a hard time answering her questions because the ending of my story kept changing. But I knew that the message was still basically the same. Mm-hmm. So as I tried to answer her questions, what I didn't get was that she was trying to create a product within a product that didn't really stand alone. Mm-hmm. So until she saw it at my house, sitting on my furniture, and she gasped when she first heard it in the scene. That's when it clicked for me. And she told me, she said, I've always felt like that this song was missing a leg until I saw it in the film. It just didn't completely make sense to me. Now it makes sense to me. And I'm like, well, I have your voice, so I don't really care about anything else, but it is a great, great song. Lyrically rich.
Yeah.
Her voice, it's hard to even describe her vocal stylings.
It reminds me kind of like, of Over the Rhine, like that kind that kind of vocal style.
Yeah, and the track name "Strange Situation," oddly enough, is a title that she came up with, I think, a couple years ago.
Wow.
And she thought, man, that would make a great film song.
Nice.
And she just shelved it because she didn't have a film she was working on for a song. And so when I approached her about it, she was like, what do you think about Strange Situation? And I was like, oh, I like that. Let's run with that. So it was a good partnership.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
You talked to, awesome. There's a, you
said, and I wrote a track.
You, yes. On the soundtrack.
I did.
Yes.
There's a bonus track by me.
And it's amazing.
Thank you, Chris.
I haven't listened to it.
I'll pay you later.
I'm gonna have to have you sing Whisper. It to me like right now.
What's it like to be an aspiring hip hop artist in Nashville?
At 42 years old and balding.
Yeah.
It's a tough life, man.
I mean, look at Dre.
I know.
Old and balding.
Dre?
Yes.
The one who just sold Beats to Apple. By Apple.
He works for Apple now.
I think he's doing fine.
Yeah.
Beats by Dre will prevail.
They say he works for Apple. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to go into Apple every morning and sit in an office somewhere.
Yeah, dude, he wears a suit, man. He carries
a cubicle.
he,
Dre, sit down.
He rides a Segway in there, yeah. You know?
Get back to work, Dre.
Get back to work. Your lunch break was about 20 minutes too long today, Dre.
Start making some more headphones for us.
Well, if I may, you know, like, you have very good flow.
Thank you, brother.
Yeah.
I agree. But it's because...
So if I laid down a sick beat right now...
I wouldn't help you out at all. Not during this podcast. That's what I grew up with. I grew up with Public Enemy. Nice. I grew up with Eric B. and Rakim. I grew up with, you know, the more mainstream stuff like LL Cool J. And I mean, that was my rap, hip-hop, from the late 80s. And so, yeah, I always thought, man, just one time... I would like to tell my life track, and it's like 3.5-4 minutes. I don't know how long it is, but James Childs produced that.
Yeah,
before
that's awesome.
That was a standalone thing before the film ever happened.
That's awesome.
So you started your rap project, and then you decided to start a film, do a film, and then
that's
it ended
right.
up they
oddly
converged.
Enough, well, they converged because the whisper.
Yeah.
And my song is that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Are you getting farther away or mm-hmm. closer to the life that you're intended to lead? So
that's awesome.
It made its way into the song and it made its way into the film because that has shifted my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That question has shifted my life. So
for people who want the soundtrack, you can listen to it on SoundCloud, I think.
Yep.
And then if you want to buy it, it's $7 on SoundCloud, but for just $3 more. You can get the whole deluxe package.
The whole deluxe package.
Yeah. Seriously, I'm telling you, the deluxe package
Bandcamp.
Is like
that's what it's not SoundCloud. Bandcamp. Yes, I'm
it
sorry
very
that.
Much is a deluxe edition. So, like, let's run down like what you get in the deluxe edition.
Well, I'll give you some of the heavies. I mean, obviously, you get the film download. You get the commentary version, which is the film. It's not just an audio track of me and Bobby Marco, my producing partner, talking. We do the little pop up. Little video box every once in a while.
Yeah.
Like pop-up video.
Do you guys sing that every time? I feel like that'd be awesome.
Every time. Just we probably should redo it. Yeah, that was a bad idea. Let's see. I believe there's a Q&A, an audio file of a Q&A session that we did at an event called Creative Koinonia, mm-hmm. Celebration of Story. Let's see. There's the soundtrack, the mm-hmm. full soundtrack. Mm-hmm. I believe that also includes the bonus tracks, like the B-sides mm-hmm. kind of stuff. What else? What else am I missing here?
There's a script in there.
Oh, that's
yeah,
right.
The screenplay.
Well, the reason I forgot that was because that was another late addition. Just the other day, I was like, man, we should throw in my screenplay. That would be
Is
fun.
Is that the shooting
script? It's the most recent. Okay. So it involves the narration.
Okay.
Which there was no narration until mm-hmm. like a month before we actually added that. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, I have to share this. The narration was done on my voice memo on my iPhone early Saturday morning. I woke my son Zachary up while he was groggy.
Thank you, Steve Jobs,
and
man.
Thank you, Steve Jobs. And so I basically would just hit record and I would say, every house needs memories. And he would say it. And then afterwards, he was like, it was horrible. And I was like, no, that's exactly what I wanted. I was like, groggy is good.
Yeah, he's going, man, I was all tired.
It would be amazing if he didn't remember this. Yeah. Like you're like, go back to bed. Shh.
That's right. That's right.
And then he's like, when did I say that?
Yeah. He had no recollection of it at all. But so, yeah, the PDF of the screenplay.
That's awesome.
So there's a few things. There's a few things that are tweaked in it. I think when he meets what we call him Beer Guy. That's the guy who invites him into uh-huh. the party.
That's Eddie Haskell.
And his name is Andrew Gum. And nice. Andrew is hilarious.
Yeah.
And I feel like
I wanted to follow him into this party.
I know.
I mean, he's just like that welcoming.
Which,
again,
you really have to believe that or that whole thing doesn't make sense.
Right.
So if you don't buy that, you don't buy it at all. But Andrew, I feel like he ad-libbed, I don't know, 40% of the dialogue that I wrote and gave me much better words. So that's not all of that is in the script, how I wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's all pretty much there.
I have a couple things. First, I want something I thought of at the party whenever he goes and quote unquote rescues the girl from her boyfriend.
Right.
What inside him, why did he do that? Because I look at
it's
the character
question.
And I say like, he doesn't seem like the kind of person who would do that.
It's because she's a female. Hmm. And because his whole world is women.
Hmm.
The only person that he's ever connected with really was his mother.
Mm-hmm.
His father was never really around.
Mm-hmm.
Connie, even though we talked about how that was kind of a fraudulent relationship, to him it mattered. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was just this instinctive thing of what chivalry is supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. And so he didn't really think it through. Mm-hmm. He reacted. And it was really only, he didn't react until it was a heightened mm-hmm. moment. It wasn't until it got pretty physical before he got physical. Mm-hmm. He was wondering why no one else was paying any attention to this. Mm-hmm. But I wrote that with the thought in mind that it's because she's a female. And this is what he thinks chivalry looks like. And she clearly does not think that's what chivalry needs to be for her in that moment.
Mm. So. Right. Mm. I can relate.
I definitely like, I guess
well, no, I'm, you I'm, can relate no, to no, that. No.
Yes. I've routinely go, just pick fights. Just,
yeah. I think, at local I think
like parties. People over the head with bottles
on my, like whenever I saw that, I inserted some backstory into his life that definitely had to do with, more with his like, you know, relationship with like between his mother and father, that sort of thing. So okay. I was envisioning some, you know, form of maybe abuse, spousal abuse, that sort of thing in his childhood. Whenever that kind of went down, you know, so yeah, I mean, it kind of relates to that as well. So
you also have to remember that everything he does in his life is controlled and structured. Mm-hmm. So he plans his Friday nights at 8 o'clock with Connie. Mm-hmm. He always reads her jokes. He always does the magic tricks. He has 3 meals that he knows how to make. Mm-hmm. When he needs to get away from the house, he rides his bike. Mm-hmm. I mean, he has a routine. And so moments of tension, things that are unstructured, that are out of his control, you know, he doesn't know what to do with that. Mm-hmm. And in that situation, he probably just felt like he didn't really have any other options. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You sent me something today. It was like you go over like three problems that
I think it was three questions
every storyteller must ask.
In that talk, you mention collaboration, and I forget what the exact line is, but it's like collaboration.
It may hurt you, but it always helps.
Helps your story.
And I love that. You know,
it's true. It always hurts.
Well, like you mentioned, you know, like that scene with your son and. Yeah. Your lead actor, you know, like
Justin
Hand, and the fact that wasn't planned and you kind of resisted it, you know, internally at first, but that's, you know, one of the best parts of the film.
Yeah.
I really like that idea, you know.
I think that this might be something that storytellers need to take a real hard look at depending upon their age. Mm-hmm. I really feel like that might be an age thing. A younger storyteller mm-hmm. might feel more of a need to assert his or her ideas and no, I have an innovative thing here mm-hmm. and I'm writing the great American novel mm-hmm. and what I'm going to do. And it becomes very much a lonely, approach to doing something that will be a misstep mm-hmm. eventually. So it will hurt. Every storyteller is better off with collaboration, but you cannot get to those magic moments without pain. Mm-hmm. It's going to hurt because it's your baby. Mm-hmm. And if you are opening your you know, product up mm-hmm. to allow feedback or to maybe come at it from a different way, mm-hmm. You have to check yourself at the door a little bit mm-hmm. and ask yourself, like, what is my goal here to tell a good story? Or is my goal to say, I told this story good. Mm-hmm. And if I'm honest, I want to tell the story good, mm-hmm. but ultimately I just want to tell a good story.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I like in that talk, like you kind of relate it to other things in life too, you know, not just, you know, like, you related it to, like, you know, if you want to start a nonprofit or like whatever you're wanting to do, whatever your story is, it's better. And with, you know, like with collaboration
and to have those people in your life who are not afraid to tell you the truth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like those are the people you have to latch on to.
Mm-hmm. People you trust for sure.
The people who you trust to give you the absolute worst news about what you think is the next greatest thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 'Cause you might still have the next greatest thing, but it's still good to go through the process of looking at it in the mirror a little bit. So
definitely,
I mean, there's a lot of different ways that you could discuss the collaborative process, but, you also just have to remember, another thing that I spoke about in that talk is that when you collaborate, you have to trust people who are trustworthy. Mm-hmm. But once you pick someone who is trustworthy, mm-hmm. then you actually have to trust them.
Put your money like, where your mouth is.
You have to put your money where your mouth, and it's not easy.
Yeah.
Like on paper, it's like, oh, I totally trust them. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, you don't.
And it comes down to the wire. It's like.
Comes down to the wire. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but that's why it's important to pick someone who's trustworthy early on, mm-hmm. so that you're not having, because that is a real struggle. Mm-hmm. If they're not trustworthy, then you might have a legitimate conflict that mm-hmm. you're dealing with there. But if they're trustworthy, you gotta mm-hmm. gotta give yourself over to it.
Ernest Hemingway has a quote where he says the best way to find out if you can trust someone is to trust them.
Yeah,
you know. And so I just wanted to kind of finish up with that,
which mm-hmm. is pretty. It's so simple. Collaboration for me was my personal summit, while the story is this person trying to learn how to be vulnerable,
yeah.
and find community and, yeah. and relationships. I'm having to trust and collaborate. And I mean, I had a personal journey
yeah.
of community on my own happening through the whole thing. So
you take those steps, you know, it's like you take those steps and walk up to your next door neighbor and say, I need eggs in order to give you a gift.
Right.
You know?
Oh, well, go ahead.
No. Okay. Well, all I was going to say was I've done two film shorts previous to Fruitcake, and no one has seen those films because they were not done very well, and they went nowhere, and I didn't know how to get them anywhere. Mm-hmm. That all changes when you start to collaborate with someone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Whenever I heard you talking about that, like I immediately applied it to like this podcast, you know, like, I wouldn't be doing, you know, this podcast without John.
Right.
And like, and I can't tell you how many times we, you know, like we'll get in heated discussions about what we should be doing on the show yeah. or about the show or, you know, like, and it's just like, but without that pain, like it makes it better. And yeah. Yeah. like, and it wouldn't be happening without that.
And you guys are better when you do it.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Definitely. And, you're stronger. Your brotherhood.
Our brethren.
Your brethren. It's strong. And, you know, I want to, in the middle of all these laughs, I want to say a very sincere statement.
Yeah.
The Wright brothers, not Orville and
Wilbur.
I was about to say, are we building the plane now?
Of aeronautics fame, but I'll call you the Wright boys.
All right.
You know, for people who listen to this podcast, you know, it's fun. It's fun. But to know you guys, and I really don't even know John well, but the few social times we've had,
yeah.
I gravitated towards, I was excited about them. I knew, oh, this is going to be fun. I'm going to hang out with John, the beard guy. Yeah, let's do this. Let's go see that movie, you know? But I had a walk with you the other day, walking back from something, and I said something like, dude, you're so happy. You and your brother are so, you're like the happiest guys I know. And you go, you were just kind of like, yeah, I mean, we really haven't, we don't have a reason not to yet, I guess. It was, it's that simple. But,
depending on what happens with E3, I might have a prop. No, I'm totally kidding. I'm just,
but you guys being around happy people is an infectious thing. Mm. And that's not a small thing, for you guys to, I mean, it's obvious that you guys are, you enjoy each other. Me and my brother are very close. So I always appreciate seeing that in other people, but you guys are just, you know, the happiness that you have. I mean, that stuff is very infectious.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. We
keep on keeping on. That is a sincere statement.
Thank yeah. you. Thank you. Well, we like you and we like your movie.
You
yes.
do?
Yes.
Yes. Thank you.
And yes. we'll have to have you back on in yeah. order to like review some of these films, you know, that sort of thing. We need to go see a film and then, and do a review of it with you sometime, man.
I would love to be a guest reviewer with you guys. That'd really would. I will come back if you invite me.
For sure. We will invite you. That yes. is that is a promise.
Fantastic.
So we can find the movie at fruitcakemovie.com.
Fruitcakemovie.com. You can follow us on Twitter at fruitcake_movie.
And you personally at?
At DW Cuts.
Awesome. We'll, I will think back about things that we talked about and try to throw all the links on the article at stayontargetpodcast.com. You can find it there. Mm-hmm. You can find John and I on Twitter at yep. ChrisWright250.
And JohnWright777. 2 weeks from now, we're talking about E3. Next yes. week is going to be a review of some sort.
Okay.
Of a video game, most likely.
All right. We're not committing yet because we haven't played it.
It's very non-committal right now. But I
guarantee I haven't played it.
We've made that mistake sometimes in the past. We'll be like, we're reviewing this thing. And we're like, oh man, we can't finish it.
Yeah, and then it comes out and it's like a 40-hour game. And it's like, I would have to play literally all night and all day and all night again in order to make this happen.
Oh my gosh.
So we're not mirroring ourselves to that.
Yes.
But anyway, yes.
In theory.
But head over to StanTargetPodcast.com. We've got a lot of great content. We've got the review recently of X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yes.
We've got a few other reviews on there. Of
Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Yes.
That's it for this week. We'll see you next time on Stay on Target. I was top in Tennessee for a while on Quiz Up when Seinfeld.
I'd like to give you a run for your money.
All right.
I think I might rival you.
You probably could. You probably watched it.
You know what?
Lie, like whenever it was actually on.
That last season, as bad as some of those episodes
were. I love it, dude.
Kramer is better than ever in the last season.
The last season is probably my favorite season.
Okay, one of the episodes that no one, like, unless you you watched the DVDs or watched it live, no one sees anymore. Is the Puerto Rican Day Parade episode because apparently Puerto Ricans got mad.
They got very upset.
And so it's not in syndication at all. But
they're very festive people.
Yes.
Just not for Seinfeld.
Like one of my favorite parts of the entire series are whenever Pennypacker, Vandalay, and Van Nostrand all meet each other in that apartment.
Yes. Man. That was a glorious reunion.
their alter egos have never met until that point.
How great was Bizarro?
Bizarro, yes.
That storyline was brilliant. And it had to happen because of his fixation with Superman.
Right.
That had to happen.
Oh, yeah.
Have you watched the special features on the DVDs?
I have.
So something that I like that they talk about on there is like they go – whenever – I think it's the last two seasons were – was whenever Larry David left, correct? He left.
I think it was last seasons. Three, but I could be wrong.
So after he leaves, then all the writers, like they start hiring writers who were fans of the show before they started writing for it.
Uh-huh.
And so they start playing on all these inside jokes from previous seasons.
Right. Yeah.
That's why I love those later seasons so much.
Yeah.
Because guys like that sit around and go, what if all of their alter egos met in a room?
It's inside jokes for the big fans.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
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 You know Keith Hernandez, the baseball player?
Yes.
He is more known for his Seinfeld than he is for baseball. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing.
Like with the current generation. They don't know who Keith Hernandez was.
Yeah.
But they're like,
except for he got spit on.
He's the guy on Seinfeld that got spit on. the magic
loogie
theory. Yeah.
The JFK whole thing.
Curved
which apparently
in mid-air.
Was Magneto.
Yeah. Apparently was
or wait.
Or no.
It wasn't.
Spoilers.
Are we still doing the show?
We're on the show, but